Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, let's get back in here on Diamond Conversations. As always, a part of the Place to Be Nation podcasting network. If you didn't know by now, my name is Ian, and every single week we sit down to have a Diamond Conversation with somebody from the world of the great game of baseball. And this week is an interview I've been looking forward to for a couple of weeks now, and I'm so thrilled to be joined by former St. Louis Cardinals pitcher and also United States Navy Lieutenant, Mr. Mitch Harris, joining us this evening. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it, Ian. Thanks for inviting me on, man.
Oh, absolutely. Now, we were just chatting before we got started about, you know, where we're located, where we're from. And I just want to get this one out there first, because it's just a funny little factoid to our conversation. The man who preceded you in stepping onto the major league field, who was also a United States Navy Academy graduate, Mr. Nemo Gaines, lived in the town right next to where I live in Virginia.
No way.
And when I saw that, when I was doing my research, it blew me away. Of all the places in the world, Mr. Gaines passed away in Warrenton, Virginia, which is one town over from where I live.
That is incredible. And I'm actually, I'm looking up the name of the book, but Kevin Keating. So this is a cool thing. So when I found all this out, obviously everyone was trying to figure out, like, you know, does Mitch know anything about Nemo Gaines? What's the history there? And I, you know, I knew nothing. I kind of learned all this, you know, just like everybody else did. And shortly thereafter, I had a letter in the mail from a guy that's a West Point grad, author of Waiting for a Sign. His name's Kevin Keating. He sent me this book, and he sent me this letter, like, you know, talking about how he's gotten all these really cool signatures. And in the back of this book was the signature of Nemo Gaines. And
wow.
So that's really cool that, you know, we have a connection there. But yeah, I mean, I'm very, you know, thankful and you know, very proud of the story. And it was a fun time.
It's so cool to see that stat. You know what I mean? Like, obviously I can't imagine what it's like to actually be a professional baseball player and to have that experience and the, you know, the adulation you felt going on the field for the first time. And we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes, but to be only one of two guys up to that point when you debuted is like, that's amazing for the history of a game like baseball. Now, Mr. Gaines, with all due respect, did not have the longest of outings for his tenure in the major leagues. But nonetheless, one of two, that is that's a heck of a class to be a part of.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that I give credit to, you know, the coaches and trainers and all the people that I work with, you know, during my time in the minor leagues and you know, everybody that helped me along the way, but the difference was, you know, having to figure out from the, you know, active duty side and not playing for those 5 years and then figuring out how in the world I was going to get my body and arm back in shape. That was the big, you know, big difference between, you know, Nemo and myself was, you know, he was fortunate that he was able to go right out of the academy and still serve, you know, amongst that time frame, you know, whereas mine was flipped. And, you know, I can't stress enough how, you know, awesome it was to have the people around me, you know, the COs, my guys that were, you know, in my division on the ships, that, you know, the people I threw with on the flight deck. And it was just it was just one of those things people always ask, like, you know, what would you change? What would you do different? And, you know, I can honestly say I wouldn't change it for anything. You know, it's my story and there's none like it.
It's such a great story, and following, you know, a lot of interviews you've done and all the stuff that was written about you when you were debuting, it's just so cool to see how you did, you know, kind of get that roadblock put in your way of, you know, look, you know, you're in the Navy and, you know, you have this chance to be a professional ball player, and the opportunities that other athletes have had to, you know, leave and go pursue that dream, you kept getting the stopping, you know, sign right in front of you. I hate to say the third base coach was holding his arms up on the side and saying, like, you know, I'm sorry. It's a war right now. You can't go anywhere.
Right, right.
And as much as it was your dream, you know, you were there to serve your country. So I see it as obviously it's kind of, it's a tough pull because you can't say one is more important than the other. And, you know, ultimately you did get what you wanted, but it just, you know, I'm sure the journey there, and we'll talk about it, you know, was quite frustrating at times for you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, I think any kid who sets a goal or dream or whatever wants to accomplish that goal. But for me, it was, you know, it was understanding that, you know, I had two things I'd committed to. I'd committed to my family, my closest friends. I'd committed to the guys in my division that, hey, if I'm going to tell these guys that, you know, whatever they're using the military for, if it's just a stepping stone for, you know, something later on in their career, if they're, you know, a career military or whatever, I always push them to strive for whatever they were wanting to do. So I committed to them that, hey, I was going to give it my all to get to the big leagues because they knew that was my goal as well. So it helped because, yes, I was torn on both sides that, man, I really wanted to, you know, fulfill my, you know, commitment to the military and to the Navy, but I also wanted to fulfill that commitment, that dream to myself and to my family and to my friends and to, you know, the guys that I led.
Yeah. And, you know, the Navy, very close to myself and my producer extraordinaire, the local statistician of the show, Mr. Doug Barclay, who's joining us. Our father's retired Navy. We've spent, you know, he was a reservist, so we didn't have to travel all around the world and move up and move into different places. But, you know, our lives changed at one point because he did go, you know, full time, basically. And when he retired, it was seeing the end of the road. It was seeing, you know, his career was going into a different chapter. So for you, looking down the barrel of you've got this talent, you're going into pitching, when you decided to go to the Naval Academy, what was your goal at first? Was it just to get through the Naval Academy and to go right to the major leagues, or was it to have a Naval career at some point?
You know, I tell this piece of the story all the time. You know, I was from a small town in North Carolina, just outside of Charlotte, and I went to a high school called South Point High School in Belmont, North Carolina. And to say that I knew what the academy was would be a flat out lie. I had no idea what the academy was. And the way I was introduced to it was one day during it was really in the fall of my senior year. I was throwing a bullpen at the baseball field there at the high school. I was playing fall ball, but was working out at the field with the baseball coach, who happened to be the assistant football coach. And during the bullpen, this guy walked up to meet with our coach to walk over to the football field to recruit for football. So he was picking up the assistant football coach to walk over to the football field and to watch practice. Well, little did I know that was the defensive coordinator for the Navy football team. Oh, and wow. So while he's sitting there throwing a bullpen, he started asking, hey, what's the deal with this guy? And the coach was like, you know, he's a good kid, but, you know, he doesn't really stand out in any one area. He's just a overall, you know, good athlete, good grades, et cetera. And the guy basically said, it's kind of a perfect fit for the academy. Has he, you know, where's he looking to go next year? And at the time it was, you know, some JUCOs, some small D1s, local to the area. And so he made a phone call, came over and talked to me and just asked if I had any interest. And of course, you know, I said at that time, I'm interested in anybody that wanted me to play college baseball. And so a couple of weeks later, we got a phone call from the coaches from the academy. And I still was kind of like, I don't know what this is. It's the Navy, you know. And I told my parents, and they're like, wait a minute, you mean the Naval Academy? And I was like, yeah. They're like, well, we're going to a visit. Like, we got to go on a visit, you know. And so we went on a visit. I fell in love with it. And then really, to kind of answer your question, I didn't really understand as an 18-year-old what that commitment meant. I honestly did not know. I knew that I was getting a great education. I knew that I was going to have to serve in the military. Did I think that I was going to be able to play pro ball? I didn't know. I also knew that I wasn't an outstanding baseball player at the time. I knew I was a good athlete, but I didn't think I was, you know, for sure going to have a shot at the big leagues. But I had, you know, two great opportunities in front of me, that I could play baseball in college and I could get an amazing education. And so after I got into the academy and really started understanding what, you know, courage, commitment, honor, you know, service before self, all these things that are so ingrained in you at the academy, that's when it became real of like, man, I've got two amazing opportunities here, and I want to just push both of them to the max.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll tell you, going to Annapolis, going to the Naval Academy as a kid growing up and having, you know, a Navy baseball shirts, I never knew of Navy baseball players. I always thought, you know, oh, well, you know, it's just everybody has a baseball team. You know, I didn't know there was a specific, you know, program, because when I thought Navy, I just thought that, you know, the guys fly the jets, they're on the ships. You know, I didn't really think much into it. So your family history is actually very tied to military service as well. So did any of that play into your family wanting you to go to that school and check it out?
No, not really. And I wouldn't even consider my family a military family. I think anybody that's my age, their grandfathers were in World War II, and you know, both of my grandfathers, one was in the Navy, one was in the Army, and so that was just in their time. Everybody was a part of the draft,
right,
and
so right, true.
You know, for us, it wasn't like, hey, we're going to be a military family. You're going to go to military school. It was just a, wow, what an opportunity. Let's just see what happens. And so, you know, I definitely had some talks with my grandfathers, which is a whole nother podcast in and of itself. had some really cool conversations with them to kind of understand, you know, what did military service mean? What did that look like? And so it was really cool to kind of follow in their footsteps and then see the pride that they had to see their grandson become an officer as they were enlisted.
That's wonderful. Now, what's your first impression of the baseball program there?
So if it's an outsider, quote unquote, looking in, you think, hey, this is a really good small D1. You know, you don't think of, hey, you're going to have a top end high draft pick come out of Navy. But I think what's impressive about the program is they take guys and mold them to that type of baseball. And what I mean by that is you're not going to have the guy that's going to hit 25 home runs. You're not going to have the guy that throws 95 on a Friday night. However, you had a guy like that just in the last couple of years that was drafted by the Red Sox. You've had some guys go in and hit well, but you're not going to have that standout guy that got looked at by, you know, the Floridas and the you know, Tennessee and all these teams that are solid. You're not going to have that, you know. And so, looking from the outside in, it's a different style of program, but it's one that I think is perfect for an academy.
What was the first thing you learned there, though, about maybe the difference in the college play? Is there anything you had to do to adjust, you know, your game? Is there stuff maybe you picked up that you didn't realize going in that you learned? Like, where were some changes that you had to make?
Oh, man, I learned a lot. So I was recruited. This is the funny part. So I was throwing a bullpen when they called the coaches. None of the coaches had seen me play before I got to the Naval Academy. They had all seen either video or had talked to, you know, area coaches or, you know, American Legion coaches. I was known at the time in high school as kind of a hitting third baseman, corners guy. So when I got to the Academy, I started at first and third and hit and just pitched every so often. My freshman year, I only had 15 innings. And so I learned that I was a pitcher my sophomore year. And so I had to learn, like, you know, how do you pitch? How do you start and throw seven innings or however many needed to go as a starter? I completely had to relearn the game my freshman and sophomore year transitioning to a pitcher. But then there's also that whole how do you tie in the academics, the military, and baseball right, all together? And that's something that you can't just learn. You have to experience and figure out on your own. Everybody handled it differently. I would say that was probably the most challenging part for me was, you know, school came easy in high school. Didn't have to study all the time. I paid attention to class, took notes, whatever, and just kind of came to me. Whereas you get to the academy and you walk into that chemistry class, if you're not studying every night, you're not going to get it. And then you've also got the military aspect on top of it. You've got to know rates as a plebe. Your freshman year, you got to know all this stuff. You got to know, you know, three meals in advance. All this stuff that goes into it that made it extremely challenging, but it, you know, it made me who I am today.
Now, we talked to a college coach these days who's a former Major League Baseball catcher who was stressing the academics a part of his program. So did they stress to you, like, you know, because, I mean, it's almost like it's like not a, a paranoia that you would have, but you got to be on point with your grades. You got to be on point with every aspect of military, you know, life that you're getting accustomed to on campus, but still being disciplined in your game. So how did you kind of balance that? Was there somebody who kind of kept you guys in line, or was it something you had to learn on your own?
No, they definitely made it a point. I mean, it was of all places, the academy definitely made it a point that if your grades aren't good enough, you're not playing, period. You know, we had a set GPA that you had to have. There was a set piece for military things that you had to do. And if you didn't meet those, you weren't going to play. And so that was just kind of a, you knew it, and you knew that was number one priority, period. So we knew that that was what we had to focus on, and baseball was our out, you know, because mentally the academy is extremely tough mentally. The physical part, you adjust, you get that, you're fine in that aspect because it's just a constant thing that you build yourself up on. But the military, the mental piece of the academy was probably the most challenging part. Having to, you know, deal with the stress, deal with the constant, you know, so your freshman year, constant people in your face and yelling this and yelling that, and then being able to go to the field where you feel comfortable, you can let your guard down, kind of relax, and then really focus on, you know, what you love.
So the transition, though, and you know, you're a third baseman turning into a pitcher. Did you miss playing third? Did you miss the, you know, what went into being an infielder versus a pitcher?
Yeah, and I was fortunate enough that, you know, I swung it well enough where, you know, the coach let me hit for myself when I pitched. So we had a weird, you know, the Patriot League was a little bit different than your SEC, ACC, where you got a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We did two Saturday, two Sunday. And again, I think that's because of the academics. So on a Saturday, we'd play 7-9, and then Sunday you play 7-9. And so I always pitched the seventh, the first game. So I got the seven inning game, and our number two, Mark McCoy, he hated me for that because I always racked up a bunch of CGs, and he had those two extra innings he had to get through to get the CGs. But it was a tough transition because you know, I loved hitting, and I didn't do as much of it as the years, you know, progressed. Because just, you know, the staff wanted me to really focus on pitching. But, you know, I was fortunate, like I said, to still be able to hit for myself. Usually the next game I would either DH or play first or the outfield so I could still stay in the lineup to hit.
So you were Ohtani before there was Ohtani.
I wouldn't go that far, but yes, I was a utility guy.
I mean, you know, and looking at your scouter report saying a guy who throws 95 with a cutter that with the ability to break bats, you gotta get him in the rotation somehow. You got to get him throwing because that's something that doesn't come along all the time.
No, I really loved it, man. I mean, to go from the mentality of you know, rearing back and let it eat. To then trying to just, you know, because as a hitter, I was definitely not your average gap to gap guy. I definitely, you know, I was a power hitter. I was definitely the, hey, I'm going to give it everything and it's either everything or I strike out. I definitely struck out plenty of times. So strikeout for me was something I enjoyed on both sides. So, you know, but I really did love it, man. I wish I could have had more time to focus on the hitting aspect, because, you know, I feel like I could have done well there, but you know, pitching was definitely my passion, and I loved it.
And this year there's no pitchers hitting, so it's kind of like a lost art.
Yeah, no kidding, man. I don't know what to think about that. I know Wainwright doesn't like it, especially after hitting some bombs here in the last few years. But man, yes. I don't know. I really don't know how to take it. I am an old school baseball soul. I love the old school baseball, you know. You know, I think there's always going to be change, and you know, this might be one of them that, you know, we'll just have to accept and see, you know, see what we think about it here in the next several years.
It's very weird because if you didn't realize that they took the you know, the pitcher hitting out of the lineup.
Yeah,
you wouldn't miss it. But right. Then when you're really watching it, and because, like, if you're watching it and your team's rallying and the number nine hitter comes up and you're looking at it, you're like, all right, I'm happy he's up, versus, you know, maybe you're in the third inning or fourth inning and here comes, you know, your pitcher up who's not going to push the runner. What's he going to do? I could see it making a difference, but I haven't really noticed it playing that big of a factor until I sit there and say, oh, this is where the pitcher was supposed to be.
Yeah, and you know what I'm waiting on, and I don't know that it's happened yet, but what I'm waiting on is to see the combination of when the pitcher would be coming up and the new rule with the three batters. Right. So having to face, you know, the three batters and having that pitcher come up, I'm curious to kind of see, you know, where you know, that DH is now that third guy that pitcher's got to face, which initially would have been the pitcher. And so it's kind of like, man, now it's kind of seems like a win-win on both sides, but I don't know. I'm kind of anxious to see how it plays out over the next year or so.
Absolutely. But, you know, we'll see. It's all a new world for us at this point. Man. We're only a few weeks into whatever this weird season is. But I digress. Now, let's talk about the draft and getting drafted and what that's like. So, obviously, you know, explain to the audience if you can and just walk us through. So, you're drafted in 2007 by the Braves, but you don't sign. You're drafted in 2008 by the Cardinals. So, kind of talk about the first draft, the second draft, and what was the backstory to it all?
Yeah, so we had a good idea after my sophomore season that there was a chance, you know, going into the junior year that I could be drafted. You know, obviously I had to have another good season, played well my junior year, went to the Cape in 2007. I think that really helped put my name out there, kind of get some recognition, pitch well in the Cape. And so we started talking with the Braves as well as the Navy to say, hey, this is what could happen. Here's what we're hearing. What do we do? You know, and, you know, we basically came to the conclusion, and this was more, you know, my decision than anybody else's, that I said, look, unless the Braves just offer something that is impossible for myself and my family to turn down, it's really an easy decision. I mean, I'm at the academy. I want to graduate. I want that diploma. I want to say that that's something I fulfilled and completed. And that was really it. And so we told the Braves that, hey, this is where we stand. So they still took me in the 24th round or something like that. And so, you know, basically said, look, we want to just maintain your rights, back when, you know, the draft was that way. And so basically they said, look, if something happens, we want to be able to say that, you know, we have your rights until next season. And so they took us, and then going into the next year was when, really to me, it seemed like it was chaos, because you look here and you see like some hope and think that there was a possibility of going to play. You talk to the next person who said there's no shot. You're going to be active duty. You'll do your 5 years and then you'll go play. Then they came out with their early release policy, which said you do 2 years of active duty and then you extend your reserve time. So you still do your commitment. It's just less active duty. So I didn't really know what was going to happen. So I was prepared mentally to say that, look, you know, I came here for a reason. At that point, back to what I said earlier, I knew what it was about. At that point, I knew, hey, I came here for a reason to be a naval officer, to lead men and women out in the fleet, and you know, what a great honor to learn leadership than to do that. And so I was prepared to do the 2 years, to do the 5 years, whatever it was, but also, you know, knowing that I wanted to play. And so when the draft came, they drafted me in the 13th round. We were very excited, but we just were kind of just waiting to see, you know, what was going to be allowed to take place.
And you hear so many things about the Cardinals organization and the history of the organization and how they really kind of foster their players. And that is really very evident in your story, that the Cardinals were there for you. They were waiting for you, you know, and you had the right people who were kind of, you know, championing you along the way to keep in touch and try to work with the Navy to see if there were points that you could come out. But just talk about the draft night, if you can, just the absolute adulation you felt of hearing your name, you know, or whoever informed you at that point as to, you know, you're now a part of the Cardinal family.
Yeah. You know, and this is me being very transparent. It was a tough night. I mean, be very honest with you, because, you know, I was an 18-year-old that read what Baseball America said. I read what the news articles said. I read what the quote unquote scouting report said. And, you know, then it seeps in of your buddy saying, man, what if you were at, you know, University of Maryland as opposed to Annapolis? What if you were at, you know, another, you know, small college that you would have gone to out of high school? you know, would you have gotten drafted in the top five rounds? Would you have gotten drafted high enough to get a large, you know, signing bonus? You know, so those kind of crept in to try to figure out, like, how am I supposed to feel about this? Because I've got these two amazing opportunities and I'm extremely excited that I'm about to get drafted. But it's also that human piece of, well, what if you weren't here? What if you, you know, and so that was tough. But, you know, when I was drafted, you know, it was actually funny because my dad could tell how difficult that afternoon was for me. So we actually left the house, went out, played golf, and about halfway through the round, I got a call from the agent and he told me, you know, hey, congrats, the Cardinals have signed you. Here's kind of where we're at with things. And so it was an awesome day, but it was extremely stressful. A lot of stuff going on in my head. But, man, I was so pumped and so fortunate that it was with an organization like the Cardinals, because, like you said, they did so much for me to be able to get me to the big leagues.
No, it's a great story, you know, and we could talk about the whole thing. I don't want to keep you all night, so we're going to jump around a little bit, and I just talk about while you're in the Navy and in your service. My favorite part of your story is you're talking about throwing on the flight deck. Yeah. We got to talk about that, because that to me is so cool. So did you pack your glove? Was that just something you always had under your pillow ready to go? And the fact you're able to find somebody to throw with on a flight deck is, like, amazing, and it's very, very nice of you to keep baseball that close to home as you're you know, on the ship.
Yeah, you know, I told myself, you know, that if this was truly something that was a dream of mine, that I wasn't ever going to let it fade. And if that meant 5 years, if that meant 2 years, if that meant, you know, whatever, I was going to make the Cardinals or whatever team tell me that, sorry, we're not going to take you. But I didn't want it to be a lack of me trying. And so I knew that if I could keep my body in the best shape that I could, that I'd have a shot of getting my arm in shape once we were, you know, back home and you know, had the time to throw. But while we were out, I still wanted to get my arm, you know, moving and just, you know, keep the blood pumping, you know, in my arm and try to just keep that muscle memory going as best I could. And so, yeah, on the LPD that I was on, USS Ponce, one of the cooks was from Dominican. And, when I found that out, I went by and just said, hey man, you know, I told you're from the Dominican. I'm assuming, you know, you play a bunch of baseball, you know, growing up. And he just lit up, you know, and he was like, oh, Poppy, let's go throw, man. And so I was like, man, if you will, man, I'll go to the flight deck whenever you're available. And he was like, you come, let me know anytime you want to throw and we'll go. So sure enough, I mean, we would go out there, every day we could. My dad would ship out baseballs because you miss one, you're not getting it back. And you know, the flight deck was extremely rough. I mean, so rough it would just take the soles right off your shoes. So if it hit the flight deck, the ball was completely ruined, scuffed. So dad would send, you know, these bags of balls every couple of weeks. And so we went out there as often as we could, and I mean, it was big enough to where I could basically long toss. And so I tried to just keep in as best baseball shape as I could until we got back home and I could get out and actually throw at the field.
I just, that is so resourceful. I gotta say, that is so cool. But it's almost like akin to when the kid lost his ball over the fence of the mean neighbor's lawn. That ball goes over the side of the ship. It's all she wrote. So good. Yeah. Dad was smart enough to throw a couple of balls in that bag.
Yeah, yeah. It was. You're not jumping in and getting that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I'm going to move forward a little bit. I don't want to just keep on. Like I said, we'll talk all night if we had to. But I want to talk about your major league debut. And one of the great things about this day and age is there is a lot of stuff to go back and look at. And I felt like I was able to see almost all the coverage that not only the St. Louis sports media had, but also anywhere that you were kind of going at that point as your story was spreading throughout Major League Baseball. But a guy you mentioned earlier, Adam Wainwright, is the guy that you had to come in and make your major league debut after he got hurt. So kind of talk about the major league debut, what that felt like, what the call was like, and stepping onto the diamond with that Cardinal uniform on.
Yeah, so it was Man, it was a crazy couple weeks. First week or so being in the big leagues, you know, I was called up to DC when Peter Borges and his wife were having a baby, and you know, was there in DC for a 3-game series, and all the games were relatively close, and so I didn't have an opportunity to get in during that series. So we fly up to Milwaukee, and you know, I hadn't thrown in what four or five days. And, you know, knowing that Waino was on the mound, I thought, well, here goes another day. I'm not going to get to throw because, you know, this guy's going to throw, you know, 7 shutty, and we're going to go to, you know, the setup guy and then to Rosie, and the game's over, you know. And so here we are about the, third or fourth inning. And, you know, I'm thinking when I see him, you know, go down from his Achilles thing, I'm thinking that our long guy that, you know, Villanueva at the time, I just knew when the phone rang, it was like we all knew, hey, Villanueva's in, and, man, he's going to have to pick up 3 or 4 innings here. So when the phone rang and they said, Harris, you're in, it took me a few minutes to figure out, like, oh, he's talking to me. Like, that's my name. And so I got up and tried to, like, kind of get my mind in the mindset of, like, dude, you're going in, and this is a big league game, you know. And so, of course, I get on the mound. I spike the first ball to our bullpen catcher. And he just laughed and said, I understand, not a big deal. You know, and you know, and I finally kind of honed in and got ready. I had a full, you know, half inning to get ready because of that. And so, you know, when that door swung open, having that amount of people, you would think it was just this loud, exciting, just crazy moment. But for me, it was almost like a surreal, hey, this has finally happened. All the stuff that you've gone through, all the challenge that you've faced, all the people who said it would never happen, all the doubts that you had, you did it. Enjoy it. Do what you know to do. Rely on the process of what you've done up until this point, and just go pitch. And so it was deathly silent as I ran into you know, to the mound and got up there, and you know, I see Tony Cruz, who's catching that day, and it was really just like a. It honestly felt like a day back on you know, the fields in Jupiter. We just got into the rhythm, and man, it was something I'll obviously never forget.
So, what do you have saved from it? Do you have the ball? You have the jersey. What do you have saved from the debut?
D all the above. Yeah, I've got the ball, got the jersey, got the lineup card. Yeah, it's something that you know, I hope to give to my son one day, and you know, I'm so you know, happy and obviously proud of what we had to accomplish to get to there. So I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, people don't know on the backside, not only from a baseball perspective but a personal perspective that I went through from the time that you know, I got out of the academy up until, you know, I got to the big leagues. Matter of fact, we're in the process of writing a book about it, so we're anxious to see, wow, you know, how that transpires. But I want to tell my story, not just the one you see on Google that says, "Hey, here's a picture from the Cardinals." Da 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 da. But I want to, exactly, tell the full story, because I think too many people, you know, put people up on pedestals and say, "Man, what a cool thing! I'll never be able to do anything like that." But if you really step back and realize, I'm just like anybody else that's faced things in their life, that's had challenges or had goals or whatever. And I really want to impact and inspire people to realize that, hey, whatever it is that you're trying to do, you can do it. If I can get through what I had to go through to get to that level, then you can do whatever it is that you're striving for. And so that's what we want from the book. I want to tell people my story, not just the one that you can find online, but the one that's personal to me. Really be transparent and open with people to say, hey, look, you know, everyone goes through struggles, but no matter how hard you get knocked down, you can always get back up.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, I mean, I knew the story from when you came up, but I heard you on an MLB Network symposium that they had on MLB Radio, where I was just floored with just how you were able to share so many details of everything throughout your journey that was maybe this much of it being baseball. And yeah, that's what really took me to wanting to pursue you to come on the show. But before we kind of head to the wrap up, I want to bring in Doug here for a second, because, you know, I haven't shut up for 33 minutes, but Doug's always, he always likes to add in some cool little notes here. So I'm going to bring Doug in here, and he's going to step in and tackle a couple here.
How's it going, Mitch? Looking through some of your stats, I just have one question for you.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about June 8th, when you faced Christian Frederick in the box for your one major league at bat?
Oh man, I tell you what, he got really lucky that day, but you know, I just wasn't seeing it well. No, in all honesty, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, we were up by, I don't even remember, 6-7 runs, I believe, and you know, I'm on deck and let me back up. I remember thinking, hey, I just threw an inning, the pitcher spot's coming up, I'm done. And then I get a look from Matheny, who said, hey, grab a bat, you're going back out. And I thought, did he say grab a bat? So, you know, I had to scramble to find a bat, first of all, and batting gloves. And so I get up there and I'm swinging on the deck and, you know, guys are kind of chuckling like, dude, this guy hasn't swung in, you know, 10 years, let alone, I mean, what's this guy going to do? You know? And so I'm thinking he's going to give me the take sign. Hey, you know, don't hurt yourself. Just get up there. And so we can go back out and finish the game. Well, I get on deck and he gives me the swing away sign. I thought, okay, we're in Colorado. The ball flies here. I just got to get it on the barrel. It can't be that hard. You just get it on the barrel. I hit in college. You know, there's no big deal. Man, first pitch, he throws me the lefty, throws me the first pitch backdoor slider, or excuse me, a back foot slider. And I think I look back at the catcher and I kind of smirked and I said, you know, I haven't hit in 10 years. What are y'all doing? And he laughed, you know, and I'm thinking like, good God, like that is the nastiest slider I've ever seen. Of course, you know, I hadn't seen a slider in 10 years. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll just take this next pitch. He's going to throw a fastball. He's just pitching backwards. Sure enough, he dots a fastball on the outside corner, and I'm thinking, oh, great. I got no shot. I'm 0-2 here. Well, he's going to throw me another slider for sure. I'm taking all the way. Sure enough, throws me a slider in the dirt, and I'm thinking like, oh, I got him now. You know, he's going to come up with some high heat, and I'm just going to take it to right center field and have my only home run in the big leagues. And I didn't sniff it. I didn't even come close. He blew it by me, and I don't know that my bat left my shoulder before the catcher caught it.
And then, you know, you end the inning with that. You go back out and you take the mound, and the first batter digging in is Nolan Arenado.
Yeah, that was awesome. Having to come off of the heartbreak of striking out and then facing a guy who's pretty good there at the plate. Hopefully I got him out. Did I get him out?
Arenado grounded out to third base. Then you got Ben Paulson on a line out to right. And then the catcher from before, you struck out Nick Hundley swinging to end the inning.
Perfect. See, you got to put the tough stuff behind you and just keep pounding.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, is that all you got tonight, Doug? We wrap you up.
That's it for me tonight.
See, that's why they call him the best color guy in the business, because he's in and out before he's gone. But all right. Yeah, we're going to head into the wrap up here. And again, the story itself, now that there is a book in the process, now I feel better that I didn't get to some of this because now I want to read it. I don't want you to give too much away. So that's
we got to keep some of that stuff hidden.
Exactly. So tell the people what you're up to these days. I know that you're since retired from Major League Baseball and you moved on and you're kind of working in a really specialized role. So kind of tell the listeners at Diamond Conversations what Mitch Harris is up to these days.
Yeah, so after I got out, I noticed just from, you know, I had a lot of experience off the field and everybody that I met in the clubhouse and playing ball had a lot of experience in baseball, not a lot of life experience. And so seeing that and realizing that, I noticed that one of the biggest things that struck me was financial literacy was just not a big thing with a lot of the teammates I played with. And so I was interested in that. So I dove back into that as soon as I was done after my surgery in 16. And so now I work at Merrill Lynch here in Atlanta. Love it. Helping people out, you know, teaching and educating. So that's what we're doing now. But, you know, another thing I'm passionate about, too, is, you know, transition and identity, because too many guys I've talked with, now, you know, when they make the transition either out of the military or out of pro sports, it's really tough once you take that uniform off to understand who you are. And so one of the things I've been doing is I started my own podcast as well at MitchHarris.com. And we talk about things that just like that, that are super transparent, that we just dig into the weeds and say, look, man, like if this is kind of what we're going through, how do we make the adjustment to either get out of the rut? How do we face the battle and win that battle with whatever it is that we're going through at the time. And so I'm excited about that. I've got some good feedback on that, so I'm excited to see where that goes.
Yeah, MitchHarris.com. I checked it out. It's great. And I knew when you had the cans on your ears that you were a pro at this, that this was not a novice thing that you just had those on your
I wouldn't
head.
Call it pro. I'm definitely the novice here trying to figure this all out. But, you know, it's a passion, man. I told someone the other day, I said, you know, I don't care if 50 people listen to it and 49 of them hate it. If that one guy listens and says, man, I needed to hear that, then that's a successful podcast. And so for me, I just want to talk about things that I feel like too many people don't want to talk about. You know, as men, we kind of hide our scars. I want to talk about them and talk about how we are better from them. And so hopefully that it'll impact some people.
No, absolutely. That's fantastic. And on Twitter, you're at Mitch_Harris2. We always forget to get to the Twitter handles because we have so much fun talking. So I wanted to mention that before we finished up here. But look, it is so cool to finally get to talk to you. And, you know, I appreciate the time and what you shared. And again, if that's headed towards a book, that is going to be a wonderful addition to the library. I will say that.
I'm hoping so.
All right, well, we're going to wrap it up here for Diamond Conversations. If you want to follow me, it's at Chad ENB. If you want to follow Doug, it's at Doug Barclay 17. And you just listened to us talking to the great Mitch Harris as we wrap it up here for another week. We will catch you next time on Diamond Conversations.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop.